Welcome back, everybody, to After Hours Let's Talk, the show where we slip into the late night conversations most people avoid until the world gets quiet. I'm your host, Shorty For Real, and tonight we're heading into the crossroads where psychology meets spirituality. We're asking a powerful question. How do our spiritual beliefs, whether rooted in religion, institution, nature, or something we can't quite name, affect our mental health? And tonight, we're not alone. Joining us is Phyllis E. Levitt, author, psychotherapist, and a woman whose life's work revolves around healing deep wounds by blending psychological insights with spiritual awareness. This one is intimate, grounding, and deeply revealing. So grab a seat, grab something to drink, and let's dive deep into this conversation. But before we head there, we're going to go into our what's on your mind tonight. And tonight's listener wrote, "I grew up religious, but now I'm unsure what I believe. Some days I feel guilty, like I'm betraying something. Other days I feel free. Is it normal for this confusion to affect my mental health?" And I can say, as far as with me, I think it's very normal. I've experienced that in life when it comes to religious things and my mental health. Sometimes they do not correspond with one another. So it is definitely something that's normal to go through. It's okay to feel that way. It's just a matter of finding some type of peace in what it is that you need and knowing that not everything religious can heal everything that you're going through, and not everything that you need to get therapy or mental health can heal what you need spiritually. And with that, Phyllis, would you like to give some feedback to our listener tonight?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, because I think when someone's really searching to make that deep connection, whether you call it a deep connection to your own essence or a deep connection to God or spirit, that a lot of things come up along the way. And in my own journey, I think there was a fluctuation between making a deep connection and feeling that deep peace and a connection to divine love or some greater spiritual sense of peace and acceptance of myself was a really big one. And then on a psychological level, I had a lot of not acceptance of myself. So there was a lot of criticism or a lot of judgment. And I would say, I think that goes on for a while, where we fluctuate back and forth between a connection to something really powerfully, unconditionally loving and wise. And then we're sort of thrust back into our personality, where we're up against the things that we really came here to learn and grow from, which might include a lot of unease, a lot of confusion, a lot of self-doubt or self-judgment. So I think that process is really normal.
Absolutely. Thank you. That was beautiful. So I want to welcome you properly into the show. Welcome in. I am very excited to have you tonight. Would you like to give the listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you. And so much for having me on your show, because I love talking about the intersection of psychology and spirit, because that's really what my life has been about. From even before I had words for psychology and spirit, I had some very spiritual experiences when I was a little girl, and I had a lot of darkness in my early life. I had repressed memories of some traumatic things that had happened to me when I was very young, and they kind of overshadowed my life. And psychologically, it left me feeling very wounded and flawed and what was wrong with me. And then there would be these kind of bursts of light and connection that were unexplained, but gave me hope and gave me a sense that there was an essence inside of me that was reachable. I grew up, you know, went to college, had children, got married and had children. I went into a spiritual group when I was very young, and that was very powerful for me. But also it really was missing the psychological healing that I really needed. And at a certain point, I went into therapy when I was a young mother and began to remember what happened to me. And that was really pivotal in my healing process. It was just a really important piece to work with the actual traumas that had happened in my life. That I think for me, and I can't speak for everyone, but for me, spirituality would not have addressed that. It brought me to an understanding that there was something that needed to be healed. You know, when I would try to meditate, sometimes very dark feelings and fear would come up in me, but I didn't know what it was attached to until I actually began to remember what happened to me and did some therapy around that. And for me, and again, I think everybody's journey is different, so I wouldn't want anyone to judge their own journey by anything I say. Really, all I would want to convey is hope and inspiration that that a journey is possible, and I think we each make that in our own unique way. For me, doing some of that deep therapy work actually opened up my connection to spirit in a very profound way, and I began to hear guidance. I began to hear guidance from, all I can say is, from a level of consciousness that I was not inhabiting as a personality. And so I began to see the interconnection between what was going on for me as Phyllis and the life that I led and the conditioning that I had and what my soul came here to transform out of some of that pain and some of that confusion and darkness. And that's been my guiding journey ever since. So that's a brief sort of introduction.
Nice. No, that is wonderful. I think I can relate to a lot of the things that you said there. I know with our spirituality, I went through a point in my life where I couldn't understand why I was feeling a certain way. Sometimes certain things would happen or certain people would come around and I would feel uneasy, and I couldn't understand why I was feeling uneasy or why this thing made me feel this particular way. Like it was like protect yourself or something's not right here type of feeling. And I had a beautiful spiritual relationship, you know, I was very spiritual, but I think since I've journeyed into my therapy for myself, it has opened up a lot of things that I forgot or pushed away that has happened in my life. And I've had a lot of aha moments, I would say, like, you know what, that's why when this thing happens or when a person is doing this particular action, I feel the way that I feel around them. And then the spiritual part comes into being able to give me a peace. Now I can reach out. I can have that healing spiritually because I understand it feels like a blockage, I guess. It's like there's a blockage between the spiritual and the psyche. So,
and I would say from my experience that when I would hit those blocks, which I did constantly, I began to notice that there was a pattern that when I was able to make any kind of connection to a higher power or love or my essential self, inevitably I would be shown those blockages because that's where the work lay. So it wasn't punishment that I came up against blocks or pain or stuck places or places where I felt like I was less than or failing in life, but it was actually the grace of spirit to show me where the work lay and what needed to be transformed. And a good example of that for me, and I don't know if your listeners can relate to this, but when I was little, And I think like so many people, nobody talked about feelings in my family and nobody actually really wanted to know your feelings. And so I learned to shut them up at a very young age. And that stayed with me of like, I can't express myself. I can't get it out. Nobody wants to hear anyway, or they will reject me or they'll ignore me or whatever as a result. And so what spirit really showed me was that I had to have my voice, and that was one of the major blocks in my life. And that was part of my journey, was just speaking up and daring to express myself, right, wrong, good or bad, just opening that channel and letting it flow. And so that's an example of where I think spiritual opening intersects with our psychology, because obviously it was a mental health issue that I couldn't have my voice, you know? And yet guidance really showed me that was essential to my own personal evolution and growth.
Right. And I believe a lot of us can relate to that aspect. I experienced the same thing, feeling mine was more of a feeling like, I would be blamed, or, you know, it was all my fault if I said something, or, you know, not being believed in what I was saying. And then I realized at a certain point in my life that I kept running into situations and relationships where if I didn't say anything and speak up and express my feelings, that things were going to continue to keep happening, you know, nothing was going to change. And once I started speaking up is when I found my voice and things started changing for me. And it's like, okay. And then I've experienced a lot less of those situations since then. And then we've moved on now to the next thing that I need to heal, and that blockage of, so I think, and our generation did grow up, well, you know, do as I say, not as I do. When I'm talking, you don't speak as a child, you know, kids are to be seen, not be heard type of deal. So, I think breaking out of that into this, generation is, I really admire them for that, because I feel like this generation is able to, they have a very loud, big voice. Right. And they're able to express themselves with no worry. So.
Right. And then I think one of the next challenges is for this generation, and probably for all of us, is once you find your voice, it definitely probably needs some fine tuning. But one of the next challenges is to learn how to listen as well, because it's not enough to just have your own voice, because everybody wants to have a voice and we all really, really want to be heard. And so one of the next challenges is to take in somebody else's reality, not necessarily adopt it as your own or agree with everything they say, but then how do we work out our human relations? Obviously, you can't work them out if you have no voice, but once you have your voice, how do we interact? And I think there's something that I think that really brings in a lot of what I would call very spiritual principles of compassion and deep understanding and acceptance, and also being powerful, but in a loving way. So, because my experience of spirit, and again, everybody has their own and yours might be different than mine, was there was never any judgment. There was truth. There was light, there was love, and there was never any judgment. And there might be direction of like, this is where to go next. But there was never any judgment. I never felt like I was a sinner or bad or failed. Everything was an opportunity to learn something from and grow.
Yes, yes. And everybody's experience is definitely different when it comes to that spiritual side, because I think mine's, for me, my spiritual journey was a lot of, I was hard-headed, so I wasn't really listening. So, and I think it was more because I was afraid. So I was afraid to step out and do the thing that I should be doing because of the fear of rejection or the fear of, I was a big people pleaser. So people feeling disappointed in me. So my spiritual journey was a lot of cry. Cry like, I'm sorry, because this keeps happening and I'm not listening. And I know I was supposed to do this and I didn't do it. So, you know, and it's just like, well, then do it again. And then maybe next time you'll do it the right way this time, you know. But I think I needed that constant bump my head, bump my head, bump my head, until I felt like, okay, I cannot keep doing this because this is hurting.
Right. And you can still even have compassion around that. Like when I look back on my younger years and my early years of being a mom, you know, I made so many mistakes and I used to judge myself so harshly. And I think one of the things that's come out of being on a spiritual as well as therapeutically healing journey is just having compassion. You know, we really were doing the best we could with what we had. And sometimes what we had wasn't great.
Absolutely. That's true. You know, nobody said that parenting and going through life was easy and there was a roadmap to how to do it right. So I definitely always make sure that I'm practicing being able to understand others, listening and understanding the way that they communicate, the way that they receive things, so that I'm able to give that to them. Because we are all different. We all receive and take things in and process things differently. So I take the time out to make sure that I'm listening, actively listening, and that I'm communicating back to a person in a way that they are able to understand it and receive it without causing any type of conflict or pain on them, or even just confusion. Because it's like, you know, sometimes there's misunderstandings and it's like, well, we weren't on the same page, or I wasn't able to have the compassion or empathy to see where you were coming from.
Right. Well, I think it's a lifelong journey myself.
It is. It is. And I definitely try to teach my kids in that aspect too, you know, like just because you do things a certain way and you see things and process things a certain way, you have to understand that everyone's different and they're not going to do it and respond the same way that you do. So you have to know that being different is okay. And just have empathy and sympathy for people when you're interacting with them.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And so, let me see. I had a question for you. As far as the psychological part, because that's the part that's very new to me. Like I just started that mental health journey, and I know that there's a lot of stigma around therapy and getting help. You know, a lot of people feel like it's kooky, or, you know, I don't want people in my business, and they think it's unhelpful. You know what I'm saying? And I think that since I've started it, because I had my digressions, but that's because I got a lot of feedback from people in my life. Like, you know, even with family, we don't do this. Everything stays in the household. You know, we don't talk about our business, and, you know, so it was really hard for me to step out and even seek the help because I was afraid of talking about things that may expose my family or my family business or things like that. So how were you able to get into that?
You know, I think I got into it. First of all, you know, nobody talked about therapy when I was growing up. Nobody talked about psychology. So it was really sort of coming on the scene when I was in my early 30s. You know, some of my friends were going to therapy and they were talking about it. And I think what brings a lot of people to therapy is like nothing else is working, you know, and you're just really in pain. And you like, you know, if you're in physical pain, if it's bad enough, you're going to go to the doctor, even if you don't like doctors, right? Because right. you don't want to be in that much pain. And I think for a lot of people, it's emotional pain brings them to therapy. Like, if nothing else is really working, if your coping mechanisms of being a people pleaser or a workaholic or being obsessive, or drinking, or raging or withdrawing, or, you know, just being depressed and isolating, if none of that's working and you're in enough distress, hopefully you'll reach out and ask for some help. So I think that's probably what brings most people to therapy. I do think therapy today is more acceptable than it was when I was younger. But there is still, as you say, a lot of stigma around it. And I think it's sad because the stigma is something for many people is something like, you know, just pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Going to therapy is a sign of weakness or failure or, you know, it's, you know, just get over it and move on. And when actually mm-hmm. it takes a lot of strength to go to therapy, it takes a lot of strength to uncover some of the formative things in your conditioning that really hurt you and left you believing negative things about yourself or left you with a set of coping mechanisms that aren't working in your adult life. It really takes strength and courage to be vulnerable and to open up to another person the things that we generally don't share with other people. And of course, you want to be with a therapist who's a safe person, who's not going to judge you, who's really going to help you find your way through whatever you're struggling with. And so you want someone who is non-judgmental and but also can give you some guidance about how to move through it and how to find that place of non-judgment of yourself and deep compassion for yourself and understanding how you got where you are. Like, we're not born flawed human beings. We're not born bad. We're not born murderous. We're not born rageful. We're not born shut down. We learn these things as a result of being in environments that are not necessarily mentally and emotionally healthy for us. And most people suffer from something, you know, and some people suffer from really terrible extremes of abuse and neglect, and they deserve, you know, anyone who's been abused or neglected or, you know, had terrible things said to them, like, you're not worth anything, which is verbal abuse, you know, or who has suffered terrible loss with no way to grieve and no one to help them through it, or had addicted parents, or there was violence in the home, or there were unrealistic expectations that you could never meet. When we suffer from those things with other human beings, we deserve help. We deserve compassion. We deserve guidance. And it's not a sign of weakness to ask for that or receive it. It's actually hard work to be in therapy, but it's healing work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do want people to understand too, as well, that with those things that all of those things that you name, those different forms of abuse, neglect, that would be the psych, because I think people kind of confuse the psychological with the spiritual. So that would be your mental health. Those are the things that you want to look at when you're doing your psychological evaluation and going through your therapy, because those are the things that not the spiritual isn't going to completely heal. Because these are things that you definitely have to work through, talk through, figure out why you're feeling, you know, come up with the feelings based off of the situation that put those feelings together with the event is what I'm trying to say.
Right. And understand that how you coped, if you shut down as a response to abuse, or you started drinking as a response to neglect or abuse, or abandonment, which is another form of trauma, you know, it's not a sign that you're a bad person. It's just a maladaptive way to cope because you couldn't come up with anything else. And there are better ways to cope.
Right.
And one of the things that I would say is that those maladaptive coping mechanisms are based on having internalized something negative about yourself. I'm not lovable. I deserve to be hurt. I'm not worthy. I'm powerless. I'm invisible. We take on negative beliefs if we're treated in negative ways from other people. And one of the really important contributions of psychology and therapy is that those negative beliefs are not true. They feel true and they kind of run our lives, but they're not true. There's no baby that's born, unworthy or unlovable or, or that's their fault if they get hurt. None of us are born that way. These are things that are either we internalize or they're told directly to us. I had a client years and years and years ago who had been terribly physically abused as a little boy. And one of the things he first said to me was, well, I deserved it because I was really bad. And it took a while for him to really understand that no child deserves abuse. No child is intrinsically bad. You might need some loving limits and boundaries, but you don't deserve to be beaten. And it was part of his work to understand that he really was not the cause. It was not his fault. And so many people internalize that it's their fault that they were molested or they were beaten or they were kicked out, or otherwise mistreated or told terrible things. No one deserves that. And so we live in a culture, unfortunately, that sometimes reinforces that certain people are bad and they deserve to be treated terribly. And that's one of the things that, I'm about is trying to heal all those messages on a cultural and social level and a political level, as well as in our own personal lives and in our families, because they mirror each other.
Yes, yes, they do. They absolutely do. And that is absolutely true. We cling on to the negative things that are said or told to us. We cling on to negative or bad coping mechanisms, because I think for a lot of people, even in my case, it was a numbing mechanism. It made me not feel. So I didn't want to feel this thing. So the drinking or people that do drugs or is to take the pain away. So I don't have to feel this thing. I don't have to remember this thing. And I can just kind of zombie my way out through that. Until it hits me again, and then I have to continue this pattern.
Right. And you know, one of the things, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I was going to say that's very sad that we think that those are the best ways, because I think, too, no one really tells us or tries to show us healthy or better ways to cope with things. And sometimes doing the healthier and positive thing to deal with things a little bit better is a lot more work. And sometimes I don't think that we're just really ready to do all the work that it takes to push through. 'Cause that thing is easier. It's less and it's easier and it works just, or so we think it works just fine.
And I think attached to that, which I've seen a lot in my practice over the years, is that, and this is maybe part of the stigma of going to therapy, is that a lot of people really think, like, I don't want to remember that. And if I were to remember that and really dive into being molested as a child or being abandoned or being bullied at school or, racially, discriminated against when I was a little kid or religiously discriminated against or discriminated against because I was poor. They're so afraid that if they dive down into those feelings to reprocess them, that they'll never come out. And how many people have I had over the years that have said to me initially, I just don't want to cry. I really feel like if I start crying, I'll never stop. And there's sort of this belief that if I were to go into the trauma in any way, that I would never get out and I would just be re-traumatized by remembering. And I can say, for having been a therapist for many, many years, well over 30 years, that I've never seen that happen for anybody. I've never worked with anybody who was re-traumatized by remembering. It might be uncomfortable for a little while, but the purpose of therapy is to heal that wound. It's not to just leave you in it. And so good therapy is going to help you move through that wound and out the other side into a place of greater self-love, greater self-acceptance, and greater access to your innate strengths and gifts. Because one of the sad parts of being traumatized for people is that everything gets buried. You know, mm-hmm. The feelings get buried, the memories often get buried, and some of your own strengths and gifts and your greatest contributions get buried along with it. And so one of the wonderful reasons to heal is to have access to your greatest potential and your greatest callings in life. And for me, that's where some of the intersection with spirit really happens, because I believe from my journey that all of our, if you call it spirit or your soul or your essence or your heart or whatever you call that deepest essential you that's innocent and pure, everybody has that. And terrible things that happen to us from other people cover it over. And so one of the beautiful gifts of working on some of that emotional and psychological wounding is that it makes the door open to connect to our essential spirit and to our connection to God, if you call it God or soul or essence or spirit or oneness or whatever you call it. And I've really seen that. That definitely was my journey. And I've seen that happen for many, many other people. So they really go together.
Yeah. Yes, they do. And you're absolutely correct. I think we do fall into this place. I'm guilty of it myself. You know, I feel like if I let go of those emotions, if I talk about those emotions, I'm going to be in a place where I can't control what's happening. And I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I'm just going to completely fall apart. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to experience it. But I think once I've started to come to the conclusion that as I'm talking through things, it's like a weight off my shoulders. It's like a relief that I'm getting this out. And I think a part of the disconnect too was that someone's actually listening to me.
Right.
And that, I think that's a big part of why people also don't want to do, because it's like, they're not going to really listen. It's going to be like any other time, you know, the judgment. But being able to get it out and have someone actually listen to you and then give you ways to cope with it in a positive way, because it doesn't go away, but it does give you ways to deal with it when it does show up in a more positive and healthy way, so that you're not hurting yourself even more. Because I feel like when you're doing things unhealthy in an unhealthy way, you're just hurting yourself more. And you do, you bury things and everything gets all mixed up and scrambled up, and everything becomes the one thing and you can't figure out why this is that and everything's all in one place. So being able to come up out of that and I think connect your spirit and be able to connect deep into your spiritual realm once you start the healing process, I think it does open up that spirit to where you're able to receive and accept more and have more peace, because I think we're all looking for peace, and it allows that peace in, it allows the calmness in. I think for me, that's how I feel when I'm in my spiritual self. I feel peaceful. I feel calm. I feel an overwhelming of love and warmth and just a soundness to me. And it's like, I can breathe, you know?
Yeah.
I think we all need to be able to just be like, I could finally breathe, you know?
One of the things I wanted to share about that I think is in line with what you're talking about, and I think it was a really big thing in my life, and I've seen it be a big thing in many, many people's lives, and that is that when we don't have a chance to heal, from the harm that might have been visited on us from other people, and especially if they were people we depended on. But it could be from anybody. But when people don't have a chance to heal, they tend to go out into the world and be attracted unconsciously to the same kinds of people that hurt them in the first place. And it doesn't really make logical sense, but on a psychological level, I think the way to understand why we do what we do is, first of all, most people repeat what they know. So if I was still trying to, as a child, get love from somebody that hurt me, most likely that pattern is embedded in me. And so as an adult, unconsciously, I'm seeking out the same kind of person to try to get them to love me. They're not going to if they're an abusive person, but that little child in me is still trying to get love from someone who couldn't give it and who might be very harmful. And that causes a lot of pain when people feel like I just keep getting attracted to the same person who's not good for me. You know, I got out of one relationship and then I get back into another one and it's the same type of person. And then they blame themselves for not being able to make a good relationship instead of understanding that unconsciously, without healing the wound that happened to them, they're just drawn back into the same fire. And one of the beauties of really doing that healing work is that attraction stops. Right. And you begin to be attracted and drawn to people that are actually good for you. And you become somebody who's good for somebody else as well. Right. So it goes both ways. And one of the, and this is sort of the reverse of what we were talking about earlier, but one of the ways that that affects, I believe, many people's relationship with either religion or spirituality is when we haven't healed those wounds, it's very common for people to be drawn then to some kind of a religion or spiritual practice that is also judgmental and potentially harmful. So if I was really judged as a child and I could never please my parents, I might unconsciously be drawn to a religion that is based on a very judgmental, shaming, blaming image of God. So our mental health can affect the way we relate to religion and spirituality. For me, and I only speak for myself, and I'm not putting down anybody's religion or spiritual practice because, like we said, everybody's drawn to what calls them. But for me, I have never experienced anything judgmental, shaming, blaming from my spiritual connection. It's always loving and wise. And okay, if I'm hurting and I bring that to my guidance, my inner guidance, it's like, okay, what is there? What's the block here? What is there to learn here? What's the next thing to do? Maybe it's have my voice. Maybe it's have better boundary. Maybe it's pursue my creativity. Maybe it's seek out a different kind of relationship. Whatever, but it's always in the vein of something positive and healing for me, not shaming and blaming. And for me, that is one of the hallmarks of what I would call the most helpful spirituality.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's beautiful. And I've said this before, I've done an episode on on that as being drawn to what we're used to having or experiencing in our lives. So I wholeheartedly believe that that's true, that we unconsciously bring in the pain that we're trying to seek validation for. So, and it's hard to break that cycle, but it's a part of healing. And I call it a trauma bond. Like, people are trauma bonding every single day, because we're not healing ourselves, and we're clinging to people that we feel like can validate a part of ourselves that we need validating, and it's just never going to happen. And
I think part of it is social. You know, as a society, we still blame people for their less than functional adaptations, you know, and people say, well, why did she go with that guy? She knew he was abusive. Or why couldn't she protect her children better? Or why did he do that? You know, when he didn't like when somebody beat him when he was a kid, how could he beat his own children? And we have to understand that whole psychological thing called the repetition compulsion. And it's not a person's fault. And yes, as adults, we're still responsible for our behavior. But if we really want to heal, we have to have some kind of compassion for the wounds that created our most dysfunctional behaviors and a path to healing for people who even have done terrible things out of the wounds that they've sustained. So I'm all for some kind of restorative justice system to be the model that we use to bring people back, help them heal, be accountable for what they did if they've done something harmful, but do everything in our power to bring them healing and restore them to who they essentially are. And that's huge.
Absolutely. Yep. I think they say what the abuser usually, or the abused becomes the abuser, because it's all that they know. It's all that they're used to. It's all that they know how to do, until someone comes in that's able to help them see a better way, understand, yeah, do the healing, do the work to understand why they are doing the things that they're doing. We definitely need a lot more of that going on in today's world. Yeah. This has been very, very good. I want to go into a message for anyone struggling tonight, for anyone listening who feels disconnected from their beliefs or scared to explore their spirituality because of past hurt. What would you say?
You know, I think sometimes one of the best accesses to connecting to ourselves on a really deep level is just to follow what you love. If you love to draw, draw. If you love to write, write. If you love animals, be with animals. If you love being in nature, be in nature. If you love working with little children, do it. There's something about following what really calls you from your heart that is part of our connecting back to our essential selves. And for many people, they've gotten the message that they should be something else. You know, they should, you know, become a teacher or a secretary. And that's fine if that's what you want to do. There's nothing wrong with any profession or any practice. But is it you? Is it bringing forth the real life force in you? Is it bringing out your creativity? Is it inspiring you? Does it make you happy? Because so many people feel so constricted by what they think they ought to be doing or how they should be or how they should look or who they should be with that they don't even have a connection anymore to who they actually are. And I know for me, you know, years before I ever did therapy, one of the places where I found the two big places where I found that joy were in nature and in art. I loved art and I loved nature. And those, you know, by themselves, they were not the source of healing, of full healing, but they at least gave me that experience of what love and joy could be like. And they were an essential part and are still an essential part of my healing process.
Absolutely. And I think what I can say to you guys out there listening is, no matter what or how you're feeling, I would say stay true to who you are. Be your complete, authentic self, regardless of how anybody feels about it, whether they like it or not. Be who you are. Be beautifully and perfectly imperfect, because we're not perfect. And it's okay to not be that way. Let your spirit evolve in the way that it needs to evolve. Be open and be receptive to anything that's positive and healthy in your life. And always make decisions based off of what makes you happy always choose you. Take great self-care when it comes to yourself. Because if you're not okay, nothing around you is going to be okay. We're going to go into our quote of the night. And our quote comes from Albert Einstein today. And it states, "The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the source of all true art and science." And with that being said, tonight's quote reminds that not everything needs an answer, and sometimes healing happiness in the space beyond explanation.
Beautiful.
And did you have any closing thoughts for us tonight, Phyllis?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to open up to someone who feels like a safe person, especially if you have access to a therapist. That's a great, you know, that can be a great avenue for healing. And just know that you were born a beautiful human being, because everybody was born a beautiful human being, and you have a right to experience that. And I would also say, don't be afraid of some of the pain along the way, because one of the things that I really learned is that sometimes the only way is through. You have to sometimes have to go through a little bit of a dark night of the soul, but there's light on the other side. And I know when I first started going to therapy myself, I didn't know if there was light on the other side. I had hoped that there would be, and I guess some part of me believed that there could be. And so persevere, you know, keep going, because it's there and it's available. And we need you. We need each other to be our greatest potential and our most loving selves. We all need each other. We are not islands. And I think that's one of the sad parts of our culture today, is that you're supposed to be your own self-made person and not need other people. And it's not true. We really need each other. And we need to be those people for each other, as well as find those people for ourselves.
Absolutely. Perfectly said. And I guess my final thoughts for you guys tonight is that, just to piggyback off of what she said just a little bit, every experience, whether it's good or bad, is definitely a lesson to be learned in everything that you go through.
Yeah.
Try to find the lesson and what the lesson it is that you need to learn in the experience that you're having, and then work on that so that you can move forward and do better when you come out. And as she said, not everything can be gone around or climbed over or ducked under. Sometimes you have to go through the thing to learn the thing to get through the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you guys for spending your night with us here at After Hours. And a huge thank you to Phyllis.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
No problem. So we're going to thank her for opening this doorway between the psyche and the spirit. If this episode touched something inside of you, breathe into that. Stay cautious about what you believe and gentle with yourself as you explore it. And you guys, take a deep breath, relax, remember that everything is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the night always has something to say. And until next time, you guys have a beautiful, beautiful night.
May I add one little thing? I just wanted to share with your audience that I wrote two books about that journey of mine that includes psyche and spirit. And the first one's called A Light in the Darkness, and the second one's called Into the Fire. And please check them out, because I think, you know, I love to share my journey, because when I was going through it, I loved reading other people's books about their journeys, and it was inspiring to me. So it's just one of the ways that I like to give back what I've gotten.
Absolutely. And we will have those links in our episode notes for you guys to access.
Thank
We will
you.
Talk to you soon. No problem.
Thank you.